Let us now welcome Paul Golden again as he brings us the second part of the message from Psalm 23. Thanks so much.
Good morning, everybody. It's great to be back again this week. Thanks for letting me come back. Apparently, it went okay last week, so I appreciate you having me come back. Just by way of thanks, before we get going, you can turn to Psalm 23, and we're going to pick up where we left off last week in Psalm 23. But before that, I just want to thank the church and appreciate the legacy of Calvary Monument Bible Church. Think of the legacy of Pastor Bob Reed and Chris Lenhart as your current pastor. So it's an honor to be here at this church. As you came in, if you're here last week, you know that I'm with the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry. If you're new this week, I serve as the Director of Church Relations, and we've been around since 1938. We're over in the Philadelphia area, actually across the river in New Jersey. And one of the things that we're known for is our magazine called Israel My Glory. And I think some of you got this as you came in. I brought a whole box load, so there's plenty on the way out where you picked up your bulletin. You can grab a free copy of one of our recent issues. This one's on the Apostle Paul, but it comes out 6 times a year. It's a great resource for you, great Bible content. Keeps you up to date on Israel and prophecy and just Old Testament, New Testament, all those great things. If you'd like, you can sign up for a free 1-year subscription, and you can go visit the table back there at the Friends of Israel. Just print legibly your name and address, and we'll make sure you get that. But it's a great resource, a free 1-year subscription, no strings attached to that. Some of you might have listened to our radio programs on WDAC. We also have a podcast called The Jew and the Gentile Podcast with Chris Katulka, Steve Herzig. About 2 weeks ago, we were able to secure an interview, and I was able to be on that interview with the U.S. ambassador to Israel, the former governor of Arkansas, Mike Huckabee. He just became ambassador about 4 months ago. So we had about he gave us 20 minutes, and we asked him a lot of questions about why we should support Israel, what's going on in the new Middle East. So I'd encourage you to check that out. It's only been out about 2 weeks. You can Google it, The Jew and the Gentile Podcast, and you'll find the Ambassador Huckabee interview. Also, I want to bring to your attention, as you stop by the table to sign up for the magazine, there's a little handy brochure called 10 Ways to Pray for Israel Today. It's pretty simple. I'd encourage you to take one, put it by your Bible, and when you have devotions, maybe pray through that, as we're instructed to do in Psalms 121:2, right? Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray for the peace of Israel. Speaking of Israel, this church historically has had a good support, always had a good reputation for supporting Israel. In fact, the second Thursday of every month over at Presbyterian Homes, Jay and Martha Mellinger host an Israeli focus group. They pray for Israel, but it's not just a prayer meeting, but it gives updates each month on what's going on in Israel. Sometimes they have guest speakers. Steve Herzig and myself have been there. It's a great time. So if you want to do more and maybe dig deeper into what's going on in Israel, that's a great way to stay connected. So see Jay and Martha, but it's the second Thursday of every month and for the Israeli focus group. One final thing before we get into Psalm 23. I mentioned last week a book that came out last year that I wrote, The Storm Before the Calm, How 10 Pro Athletes Found Peace in Their Storms of Life, and that's available for a small donation. Last week, Psalm 23, well, before I get there, one more thing. I'm going to get the clicker, find it here. We did Life as a Shepherd. I'm going to show I'd like to show that 2-minute video again. I know many weren't here last week, so if we can back that up. You guys there we go. And then we'll go one more. And then we'll get going here.
During the 1930s, the propaganda of the Nazi regime was in full force in their desire to dehumanize the Jewish people. Here in the United States, God was calling a group of Christians to bring comfort and care to Jewish people in need worldwide. In 1938, the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry was born. And today, our mission has not changed. Around the globe, our teams show compassion to the Jewish people, serving and caring for those in need. Our clinic in the heavily Jewish populated area of Buenos Aires, Argentina, provides around-the-clock medical care free of charge. we support pastors and believers in Israel both spiritually and financially. Teams travel year-round to areas of...
Well, we'll skip that. Last week you saw the video, this week you get to hear it, so... can you run it or should I skip it? All right, we're going to get it. Don't worry, we'll get you out of here by noon, so we got plenty of time.
During the 1930s, the propaganda of the Nazi regime was in full force in their desire to dehumanize the Jewish people. Here in the United States, God was calling a group of Christians to bring comfort and care to Jewish people in need worldwide. In 1938, the Friends of...
We'll skip it. Next time I come, we'll show the whole video. But hey, Friends of
During
Israel...
During the 1930s,
excuse
the
me.
Propaganda of the Nazi regime was in full
Friends of Israel's
force
built
in their
on.
Desire
up there?
To dehumanize the
All
Jewish...
All right, let's go for it. This time we'll do it with audio,
Here
video
in the United
and audio
States,
together.
God was calling a group of Christians to bring comfort and care to Jewish people in need worldwide. In 1938, the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry was born. And today, our mission has not changed. Around the globe, our teams show compassion to the Jewish people, serving and caring for those in need. Our clinic in the heavily Jewish populated area of Buenos Aires, Argentina, provides around-the-clock medical care free of charge. We support pastors and believers in Israel both spiritually and financially. Teams travel year-round to areas of Eastern Europe and Israel, providing daily necessities to Jewish people. Our Bible teachers share in churches and conferences that there is and always has been a clear plan, a past, present, and future for Israel and the Jewish people. Resources like our magazine, radio programs, and online classes are shared around the world, providing teaching and a biblical perspective on current events surrounding Israel. The Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry loves connecting the Jewish community and Christians together. In the midst of growing anti-Semitism, our volunteer trips provide Christians a chance to serve both in Israel and here at home, growing their compassion and love for the Jewish people. Our mission has stayed focused all these years to bring physical and spiritual comfort to the Jewish people while teaching about Israel and the Messiah. God has called us to proclaim the gospel, and our vision is to love the Jewish people and end Jewish hatred worldwide. We will always stand with them in their time of need, because our passion for God's word brings compassion for God's chosen people.
And I'm glad you got to see the video. As was mentioned, really what Friends of Israel is all about is that we're built on the verses Genesis 12, 1 through 3, which says this. This is God talking to Abraham. He says this, I will make you into a great nation, and I will bless you. I will make your name great, and you will be a blessing. I will bless those who bless you, and whoever curses you, I will curse. And all the peoples on earth will be blessed through you. And that's what Friends of Israel is all about. As was mentioned, it's to bring physical and spiritual comfort to the Jewish people by teaching about Israel and the Messiah. So we'd love to have you take advantage of what's out there with Friends of Israel today. So, okay, now we're finally to Psalm 23, right? By way of review, last week we looked at the Lord is our shepherd, kind of the thesis statement of the entire chapter, right? The idea of signifying protection and provision. Then David says, I shall not want. It's a declaration and a decision. And then he says in verse 2, he makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet water. And we talked about how God provides us spiritual nourishment, spiritual restoration. And speaking of restoration, right, Psalm 23:3, he restores my soul, just like that cast sheep. Now, you got to be honest. When I was driving this morning, I went by a few farms, saw some sheep out there. I did slow down a little bit to see if the sheep was upside down, right? Cast that we talked about last week. I did not see any this week, but he restores us just like that cast sheep. And the idea was from those first three verses that God provides and protects as our shepherd as we follow him and the subsequent blessings that we get to enjoy as we follow him. So today we're going to pick up in verse 4 of Psalm 23, and it says this, yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. Let's dissect that verse. I love that. Yet though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death. You ever wonder why it just doesn't say, even though I walk through the valley of death? talks about the shadow. Some commentators have said, shadows can't hurt, right? When I was young or one of my own kids, right, you take the flashlight, you turn off the lights in the room, and you do the hand, you know, the hand figures, you make like a bird, you know what I'm talking about, the hand figures with the shadows. You can pretend that the lion or whatever, the bird is going to eat them, but it's just a shadow, right? The shadow can't hurt. And this idea in Psalm 23 that even though we may face extenuating circumstances or situations, maybe physical or spiritual, it feels like death. It's just the shadow of death. The dark valley or the ravine that he talks about is just as the green pastures were right past, so is his right path towards shadow of death. In other words, both in the good times of life and the bad times of life, as we follow our shepherd, he's going to direct us on the right path, but sometimes those paths are going to take us through the valley of the shadow of death. Remember what it said in verse 3? He says, he leads me in paths of righteousness. There's an element of trust, right? As we follow our shepherd, right, figuratively, we need to be trusting the shepherd. Hey, I'm not sure. This path doesn't look good. There's some storm clouds that I see on the horizons. This looks dangerous. This looks deadly. But yet, we have a decision to trust as we follow him. I love how David puts it. It's not a plural, but it's a first-person personal pronoun, right? Where he says, I, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. It's the idea of an intimate connection with his shepherd. He says, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Those might be the best four words of the entire psalm, right? You are with me. What great comfort. Whatever you are going through now, maybe it's a physical situation, maybe it's a broken relationship, a financial pressure, whatever it might be, isn't it reassuring as we follow our shepherd to know that you, our shepherd, are with us? One writer put it this way, his presence overcomes the worst thing that remains, and that's the fear, right? He says, I will fear no evil. The idea of deep darkness or the darkest valley, whether it's death itself or a near-death experience, the psalmist says, even though I'm following on this path in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. The believer does not pass through his trouble alone. The Lord passes through it with him. Remember when he says, I shall not want? In this case, I think it's, I shall not lack courage. If I'm following the shepherd in the darkest valley, in the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. I shall not want. You are with me. Then he goes on to say, after that, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. And that's the idea of defense and deterrent. I enjoy baseball. A lot of you know I'm a big Yankee fan. I already had two people today mention that the Phillies took 2 out of 3. I'm glad I'm not going to be here next week because we'll probably be swept today. But I love baseball, right? And you can't play baseball without two basic things, right? A ball and a bat. That's the basic equipment. A barber. You can't be a barber without a set of scissors and a razor. Hopefully a mirror, right? A mechanic, you need a wrench, you need drill, you need certain equipment. And the shepherd, you can't be a shepherd in those days without a rod and a staff. It's the standard equipment for the shepherd. And as I said last week, right, David knows it because when he was younger, right, the youngest of the family, he got stuck watching the sheep. So he would understand the rod and the staff. And the rod and the staff represent God's constant vigilance. It's the idea of protection. Whereas the rod, think of it maybe like a billy club or a small bat. The rod drives enemies and animals away from the sheep. The staff, think about the crooked staff and the Christmas programs, right? It rescues and it guides the sheep. And it's the idea that God, I think David is saying it, it's the idea that God, our shepherd, fights for us. His love is not passive. It is active. David is comforted by the Lord's presence and protection, as we said, right? And I love Hebrews 13:5 says, I will never leave thee nor forsake thee. And the good shepherd does just that. He never leaves us, never forsakes us. Keller, in his book about the shepherding in Psalm 23, says this, the rod was, in fact, an extension of the owner's right arm. It stood as a symbol of his strength, his power, his authority in any serious situation. The rod was what he relied on to safeguard his flock in danger. He goes on, he says, the shepherd's rod is an instrument of protection both for himself and for his sheep when they are in danger. It is used both as a defense and a deterrent against anything that would attack. Think coyotes, wolves, snakes, stray dogs, whatever it may be. The staff, on the other hand, is unique to shepherds. The staff is a long, slender stick, with a crook on it on one end. It's designed and shaped and adapted to the needs of the sheep, and it's used only on the sheep, right? So think the rod is kind of offensive, maybe, or defensive, protecting against wild animals. The staff is really for the sheep, and it's unique to shepherds. It's designed for their benefit and adapted to their needs. And I think it's a symbol of concern and compassion of the shepherd for his sheep. Keller goes on to say, whereas the rod conveys the concept of authority, power, discipline, and defense against danger, the word staff speaks of all that is long-suffering and kind. You think about our shepherd as David recounts, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. He goes on in his book, he talks about the three areas of sheep management in which the staff plays a most significant role. Remember, Keller was a pastor, he went over to the UK, and for 8 years was a shepherd. And this is what he found, that the benefits the sheep, the staff brings sheep together into an intimate relationship. Think about a newborn lamb maybe separated from its mother, if separated, right? He graciously, tenderly brings that baby sheep back into his mother. Secondly, he says, is to draw them close to himself for intimate examination, right? A good shepherd looks after a sheep. He checks them for ticks and bugs and sores or illness. And thirdly, it's to guide the sheep. And think about, he goes on to say, he sticks out the staff and maybe presses against the side of the sheep to kind of steer the sheep. Maybe the sheep's kind of going off on his own. He comes alongside and kind of gently nudges the sheep back onto right paths. You think about that in our own spiritual walk, right? How God lovingly and tenderly, maybe with his staff, hey, don't go down that road. Hey, don't make that decision. Hey, that's risky. That's sinful. He graciously and tenderly nudges us back to the right path. It's for the benefit of the sheep. The good shepherd walks with us, right? Both in the green pastures and through the valley of the shadow of death. And he protects us too, right? Those rod and his staff. What great comfort. John 10, I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me, and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. Isn't that great? Knowing that our good shepherd has that level of care and concern for you and for me. Well, let's go on to the next verse. It's the idea, I just said that, the good shepherd, that he walks with us both in good times and bad times. But then in verse 5, it kind of changes a bit, right? Verses 1 through 4 are really in the shepherd scene, right? It's out in the wilderness, the shepherd's trying to find green pastures and water to feed his sheep. But now it changes, right? He says this, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup overflows. Well, what does that mean? Well, he transitions from the pastures in the valley of the shadow of death to a banquet scene, right? You notice that difference between verses 1 through 4, and all of a sudden, we've been transposed and transitioned into a banquet scene. And the idea of prepare a table, one writer says this, the scene changes to a banquet hall where a gracious host provides lavish hospitality. Right, it's a more intimate setting than the field, right? The shepherd and the sheep, we're talking about dangers and rod and staff and the valley of the shadow of death, but it's a more intimate, maybe more elegant setting. And it's the idea to eat together is a bond of mutual loyalty in those days. And David here in this verse is rejoicing in the fact that maybe perhaps he got through the valley of the shadow of death, and now he's in the presence of his shepherd, who provides him with great things. And he says this, it's interesting, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. Well, what does that mean? Well, it could be, it might have been written when David was running from his son Absalom. You talk about a dysfunctional family, right? Absalom, his son, is trying to kill his father David. So maybe he's saying, hey, God's protected me. David's saying, hey, you protected me. I'm celebrating. I'm rejoicing in your protection. Or it could be David feels blessed despite impending or even current danger. We don't know what the setting is or why he chose to insert in the presence of the enemies. Some have said that in those times, a victory celebration is where the enemies were present as maybe captives. Or, you know, kind of, hey, this is the loot from the victory, and the enemies are locked up over there or secured by guards, and it's maybe a celebratory banquet of victory and success. But whatever it is, David is saying, hey, listen, God, I'm so grateful you've prepared a table before me in the presence of my enemies. And then he says, you anoint my head with oil. That's an interesting statement. We don't do that today, right? And hopefully it's not castor oil. If you grew up as a youngster, we all know about castor oil. It's not that. But back then, it was a symbol of empowerment. In this context, it's a symbol of favor and blessing. It's the idea of soothing and comforting David with abundant blessing. So David is saying, whether it's literal or figurative, you know, as I follow my shepherd, David is saying, you anoint, as a follower of you, you anoint my head with oil. It's the idea of a symbol of favor and blessing. One writer put it this way, the shepherd searched the sheep for cuts and bruises. Then he poured cool, soothing oil on the sores. The Lord soothes us when we are hurt and battered. I like that analogy. You anoint my head with oil, and I like these last three words, my cup overflows. I came across Ray Vanderlyn. He's got a series on Israel, kind of walking the land. And I love how he describes what this is all about. When David is saying, my cup overflows, I think you'll appreciate it more after you hear this. He describes it as that back in those days when there was a banquet at someone's home, the host would host the banquet. Near the end of the evening, right? We've had the meal, the fun, it's getting late, right? The oil lamps are starting to flicker, time to get back home. The host would have the servants go around and fill all the guests at the table, fill their cups up, not full, but only halfway. And that was kind of a diplomatic or subtle way to say, hey, the party's over, right? Time to go home. And, you know, here's your hat, what's your hurry? You know, you look at the watch, hey, I got to get up, I got an early morning, let's go. So it was a kind of a diplomatic, traditional way of saying, hey, listen, we need to, the evening's coming to an end, this is coming to an end, so, you know, kind of a last call of sorts. But this is where it gets great. But if the hosts wanted you to stay after everyone else leaves, the servants would keep pouring wine, overflowing the cup of that individual. And that was a sign of favor and blessing. It's almost as saying, listen, hey, everyone else can go, but I want to keep on talking with you. I want to keep talking. I enjoy your fellowship and friendship so much. Let's keep this night going, right? I remember my first met my wife, dating her. You know, you go out for a date. You know, it's coming to the end. Like, I want to keep it going. Like, hey, let's go out for coffee. You know, we just got back from coffee, but let's go somewhere else for coffee. Like, you want to keep that night going because you love being in that person's presence. So that was the host way of saying, listen, everyone else can kind of hit the bricks, right? But I want you to stay. I enjoy your fellowship. And I think what David is saying here when he says, my cup overflows, is that the Lord overflows us with blessings. He wants to spend time with us. He wants to spend eternity with us, right? What great comfort and hope that is for us, right? Whatever you're going through this week, that statement, my cup overflows. As we as sheep follow our good shepherd, he wants to spend time with us. He anoints our head with oil. Our cups overflow. Ephesians 1:3 and Ephesians 3:20 say this, praise be to the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, who has blessed us in the heavenly realms with every spiritual blessing in Christ. Now to him who is able to do immeasurably more than all we ask or imagine, according to his power that is at work within us. Man, that's the spiritual blessings that we enjoy as we follow our shepherd. We've looked at how the Lord is our shepherd, Psalm 23, as he provides for and protects our sheep as we follow him. Think green pastures and waters. He restores us like that pathetic cast sheep that got stuck in the rut. His tools, the rod and staff, protect us and guide us. And then the psalm continues to kind of state the benefits of following the shepherd, right? Spiritual nourishment and spiritual restoration, as well as the overflowing cup of blessing, a sign of his favor and blessing. And as we follow our good shepherd, he promises us his goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our lives. It's, in a sense, a reciprocal relationship. You know, as we follow our shepherd, as we follow his lead, he is going to lead us on right paths, on paths of righteousness, in good times and bad, green valleys, and the valley of the shadow of death. And as we do that, we will enjoy the benefits, right? The oil on our overflowing, the cup overflowing of his blessings. As we follow him, he promises us that his goodness and mercy will follow us. Several years ago, this is maybe 60, 65 years ago, a young man from Dubois, Pennsylvania, small town out in western PA, just graduated high school. And he was given a full ride scholarship, academic scholarship, to attend Cornell University. Small town, it made the front news of the local paper, you know, kind of hometown kid, hits it big. And he wanted to be either a doctor or an engineer, but just a bright future, right? Think financially set, prestige of being a doctor, going to an Ivy League school. But yet during that summer, after his high school graduation, he felt God calling him to full-time ministry. And he wrestled all summer. He's like, how could he give up a scholarship to an Ivy League school? His parents didn't have much. They're blue collar. They're in Western PA. They couldn't afford it. They were so proud and excited to go to for him to go to Cornell. Could he give that up? Would he be disappointing his town, his family, and friends if he gave that up? And even if he did, how in the world would he pay his way to attend a Bible college? Well, he struggled all summer long with that agonizing decision. And he made a decision to follow his good shepherd, because his good shepherd was leading him into full-time ministry. He would go on to attend Philadelphia College of Bible in downtown Philadelphia. Then he went on to earn his THM at Dallas and a doctorate at Grace Theological Seminary. He would go on to teach at multiple Bible colleges, Word of Life, Lancaster Bible College, Philadelphia College of Bible, Moody. He offered several books and articles. He traveled the U.S. and the world teaching the Bible. And I'm so glad that Dr. Reynolds Showers followed the Lord's leading. He impacted thousands of students in the classroom and thousands of others through his teaching and writing ministry. It was about 6 years ago that he passed away and is enjoying his cup overflowing right in heaven. And I personally am a benefit of that decision to follow God, because as a result, I was able to marry his youngest daughter. But yet, you think about someone's decision, and he would talk about that from time to time. Excuse me. Just the agonizing decision he had to make that summer. And he would recount, like, I don't want to disappoint my parents. I don't want to disappoint my town, my high school. I have such a great opportunity. But yeah, he would say that was his best decision. It was the toughest decision he ever made, but it was the best decision he ever made. And to think about his impact and scope, and he worked for Friends of Israel for years. He's written several books that are out, still being used today and benefited. But to think about a decision, he had a choice as an 18, 19-year-old, either I'm going to follow my shepherd or I'm going to do it my own way. Remember I said last week, God's way is always the best way. And I think Psalm 23 is a great reminder to us that, listen, if we say we're Christians, we got a choice. And the right choice, it may not be the easiest, is to follow our shepherd. And when we do, the blessings will follow. I have no doubt he would have made a great medical doctor. Maybe he would have had a practice in Philly or in Lancaster, and maybe some of you would have met him. Maybe he would have been a great doctor, a great bedside manner. But I think by him choosing to follow the shepherd, he's impacted thousands and thousands of people through his teaching and writing abilities. So I say all that to say this. As we follow our good shepherd, he promises us that his goodness and mercy will follow us all the days of our lives. Now, that doesn't mean we might not get cancer. That doesn't mean we don't get Alzheimer's. That doesn't mean we might go bankrupt. It doesn't mean divorce might not happen. Life happens, right? We live in a world that is filled with the consequences of the original sin, right? The sin-cursed world. But yet, I wouldn't want to go through life without a good shepherd that we could follow during both the good times of life and the bad. Final verse says this: surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Right? Mercy, it's the idea of loving kindness. In the Hebrew, it's the idea of chesed. It's the loyal, covenant-keeping love of God that will follow us, his goodness, his mercy. And it says, it shall follow me whether we realize it or not, right? Surely goodness and mercy will follow me. I don't know how many remember going to kindergarten. Maybe some of you are too old to even have kindergarten back then, but when I was growing up, we had kindergarten, right? And my dad pastored in upstate New York, outside of Elmira, Horseheads, and where we were in a small town. So the bus stopped right in front of my house. I remember getting on the bus, drive 3 or 4 miles to the local public school. All the Christian school kids had to get off the buses and get on like one bus that took them up the street about half mile to the local Christian school, Horseheads Christian School. No big deal. First time on the bus, made it, no problem. Well, I didn't find out till like I was out of college. It might have been right before I got married that my parents finally told me this story. And maybe as parents, you relate. You know, my mom, not so much my dad, my mom was more nervous about me. Is Paul going to make it on? Is he going to get off the bus? Is he going to find the transfer bus? Is he going to make it? Are we ever going to see him again, right? I'm being dramatic. So what they told me they did, I got on the bus, right? Wait, they were outside waving goodbye. I get on the bus. Well, what they did, as soon as the bus pulled out, they jumped in the car, followed the bus all the way to the public school. They parked kind of, under cloud of suspicion, saw me get off the bus, get on the transfer bus. Then they followed the transfer bus to the Christian school to make sure I got off the bus and walked in the building, and they went home. I had no idea, right? It's kind of funny. Maybe you've done it. As parents, you understand, right? Being overprotective. But as I thought about that, you think about the goodness and mercy of God following us all the days of our life. Some days we realize it. Some days we're like, man, God, I can't imagine what blessings you have in my life. Other days, we go through our routine, we go through life, and we don't even realize that God's goodness and blessings are following us. The oil on our head, the overflowing cup of blessings. We are so blessed. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. And he will, just like my parents made sure I got to kindergarten that first day, he will make sure that we successfully get to our final destination. The Lord continues to give his own good things, which we don't deserve, and to withhold from us bad things which we do deserve. Do we really understand grace and mercy, his goodness to our lives? A few months ago, I was over at Willow Valley Retirement Home visiting with a former professor of mine. He and his wife retired there, and we're talking about, and he just was recounting, as maybe older people do, just recounting all the steps along the way of God's blessing and goodness in his life, you know, getting this job, teaching at this school, doing this, doing that, having grandkids. And he kind of had he always had a funny way about him. He said, Paul, if I ever doubt God's sovereignty and goodness in my life, just shoot me. Right? I thought, you know what? That's Joe Schlegel. I said, that's such a great statement. But yet, do we ever stop and reflect just how good God has been in our lives? Despite the cancer, despite the broken home, despite the setbacks, whatever you might be going through now or in the future, have we ever just stopped and think, man, God's blessing, God's mercy and grace on our lives is incredible. Just shoot me if I ever doubt his goodness in my life. One writer put it this way: instead of being pursued by enemies, God's goodness and love now pursue David. Isn't that an interesting turn? Right? And earlier in the psalm, he talks about the enemies, the presence of the enemies, and going through the valley of the shadow of death. But now David is seeing, listen, as I followed my good shepherd, remember, David's a man after God's own heart, but he had his own issues, right? But yet he's saying at the end of his life, I believe, listen, as I followed my good shepherd, blessings followed me, right? Instead of being pursued by my own earthly enemies, God's goodness and mercy have pursued me. And I would ask you this: are you being followed by his mercy and goodness today? And maybe you're not, because maybe you haven't put your faith in Jesus Christ. You haven't put your faith in our good shepherd. Well, now's a great time to do that, right? Are you being followed by his merciful goodness? He goes on to say, after that, goodness and mercy will follow. He says, and then I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Right? What great hope. David is no longer in the green pastures or the valley of the shadow of death, but now he is in his eternal home. As he's writing it, obviously he's still alive, but he's looking forward to the day when all of life's turmoils and storms are behind us and the blessings of having followed the Good Shepherd have been realized, and ultimately we find our way, not getting touched by death, but through the valley of the shadow of death. Many of you know Pastor John MacArthur passed away within the last week or so. And there's a great quote that came out, not on his deathbed, but I think it's something he said earlier. But he said this about death: the only thing that death can do is to deliver a believer to Jesus Christ. I thought, man, that is a pertinent, important statement, right? And what David is saying, listen, as we go through life, the good times and bad, the green pastures and still waters, the valley of the shadow of death times, as we follow him, the worst thing that can happen is that we be delivered up to spend an eternity with our good shepherd in our eternal home. What great hope. Instead of being pursued by enemies, God's goodness and love pursue David. The Lord is my shepherd, right? We looked at it this last two Sundays. He provides for and protects his sheep as we follow him, right? The green pastures and still waters. What else does he do? He restores us, right? Like cast sheep. I gave the illustration about Clint Hurdle, kind of dramatic, alcoholic and divorce and just a life wrecked for about 23 years until he hit rock bottom. And Jesus came and uprighted him out of his rut and turned him back and restored him to a right relationship. And I think for all of us, to some degree, we've been that sheep that has been stuck and without God's help brought us back into the right path. He also talks, as we talked about today, his tools that he uses, right? His rod and his staff. It's the idea of protection and guidance in our daily walk. He provides spiritual nourishment and refreshment, as was said earlier. And as we just looked at, his cup of favor and blessing overflows as we follow him. It was about a year and a half, 2 years ago, that my wife and I felt the Lord kind of leading us, maybe pulling us away from our current ministry up at Baptist Bible College, Clarkson University, and going towards something different. And we prayed a lot, and probably that was, my wife and I just talked about this a week or so ago, like, how meaningful that was as a couple to kind of go through that process together, trying like, hey, we think God is leading us somewhere else, but we don't know where. And going back and forth and talking through things and praying together about what might be next as we follow our shepherd. Well, long story short, that's a whole other sermon. I give you a story of how we landed, but the Lord opened up the door for me to join a ministry called the Friends of Israel Gospel Ministry as the director of church ministries. And it's been just over a year since we made the move. We were up in the Scranton area for about 30 years. I went there for college and seminary. We raised our kids there. And that was a big decision, right? That was tough. Like, that was a comfort zone, a lot of friends and connections, ministries. I love being the chaplain for the Yankees AAA team. But yet we sensed our good shepherd was calling us down a new path. And we had a decision to make. Am I going to stay where I'm at, keep doing what I'm doing, or am I going to follow God? And I'm so glad that we made that choice. You know, moving and packing up is no fun. If you haven't moved before, man, you don't realize how much stuff you accumulate over 20-some years of marriage. But a lot of work the last year, moving, trying to sell a house, trying to buy a house, new doctors, you know, all the stuff that goes with a move. But yet, we are so blessed. We're so glad that we joined this phenomenal ministry called Friends of Israel. Been able to go to Israel twice since we've been there, got to meet some amazing people, got to meet a member of the Knesset, got to meet some just wonderful, godly people, even in this church, that have prayed for and give financially to the ministry of Friends of Israel. It's just been a wonderful year, and as I look back, I'm so glad that I followed the Good Shepherd. I know I can speak for my late father-in-law. I'm so glad that he made that choice decades ago to give up Cornell and go to PCB and follow the Lord. And maybe today you're struggling with a decision. to make. Maybe it's a big one, maybe it's a small one. But I encourage you, follow the shepherd, right? You can't go wrong when you follow the shepherd. God's ways are always the best way. As I conclude, I just want to reread Psalm 23 in its entirety. And as we studied this last week and this week, maybe let the study, what we've learned, kind of soak in one more time. Perhaps the most famous psalm of all, Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not be in want. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside quiet waters. He restores my soul. He guides me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. Surely goodness and mercy will follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Dear Lord, as we close kind of the short two-part series on this wonderful psalm, obviously it's David's heart, David's authenticity poured out to you, but I pray that even today, those that are hearing this message would once again pour out in their own lives, thank you, Lord, for being my good shepherd. Help us daily to make that choice to follow you. And as we follow you, help us to see and enjoy the blessings, the many blessings and benefits of following you, whether we realize it or not. Just like my parents following me on that bus, whether we realize it or not, your goodness and mercy, your leadership follows us each and every day. Thank you, Lord, for being our shepherd. In your wonderful name, amen.